Well, I'm very excited because I think that what I'm going to be presenting actually is a very nice complement to what Kathy Lord just presented. What I'm going to do today is talk to you about some work that grew out of some basic research on the emergence of joint engagement, first with typically developing children and then children with developmental disorders, including autism. And we're going to talk about systematically observing changes in joint engagement during parent-child interactions. First, very quickly, why measure joint engagement? Well, clearly, this is not an audience that needs a justification for that, but let me start by saying that joint engagement occurs when a child actively shares an object or event with a social partner. So I'm really talking about shared activities, not necessarily the criteria that there be gaze to the partner. Joint engagement, when it occurs with a caregiver, can provide guided access to language and social understanding, and clearly autism spectrum disorder affects joint engagement. And also, treatments, particularly early treatments, often target joint engagement, and I think that there's growing evidence that they may lead to better outcomes. But there's a methodological challenge, which we've been hearing about this afternoon. We do have parent reports. There are wonderful experimenter-implemented assessments that can measure joint attention acts and skills. But I think they need to be complemented by watching the child actually share activities, hopefully with someone who is they're intimate with in terms of knowing and having constructed a communication situation. And so we need systematic observations during parent-child interactions that can show how joint attention skills are manifest during interactions. I can assess change over time in the form and focus of joint engagement, and can assess change over time in caregiving scaffolds. So our objective has been, in my lab, to develop an observational protocol that's semi-naturalistic, that parents will readily become involved in, they'll understand what we want, they'll find it inviting, and hopefully that children not only will tolerate what we want, but they'll also find it enjoyable. From our perspective as researchers, we also want a protocol that can be used repeatedly, that can sample a variety of communication functions, that generates reliable data rather readily, and that can be adapted to different settings, developmental levels, and ages. So in this presentation, I'm going to describe briefly a protocol that I've been using with my colleagues now for, I hate to say how many decades, which we call the Communication Play Protocol. I want to show how we can use it to extract data related to joint engagement, and then I want to present a series of adaptations, which I think may be useful in a variety of treatment studies. And we call it the Communication Play Protocol because, we actually treat it as a play. We use that metaphor to speak with the parents, the caregivers, prior to the actual play, to say that we want you to work with our director, who's actually our trained research assistant. The child is going to be the star. The caregiver is the supporting actor. We have a stage, which currently is a laboratory-based playroom. We have different contexts in our mind about what we want to be able to observe. In our original study, we had social interacting, requesting, commenting, and narrating. But from the parents' perspective, these come off as different scenes that are 5 minutes long each. There's usually two per social communicative context. So social interacting can be gauged through turn-taking or music. There's an art gallery, I want, lots of toys, which we call props. And then we give the caregiver, the director gives the caregiver before every scene, a cue card that has the plot on it and has a few directorial suggestions. But we do not give a script. And we've now done this thousands of times, literally, and almost to a person, parents sort of shake their head and say, yeah, we understand what you want. I want to give you first an example of two children who are framed by our CPP, our Communication Play Protocol. The first is a little girl. It was her first visit, her and her mother's first visit to our lab. And she's 18 months old. Whoops. She is, her expressive language is still just nascent. She has fewer than 50 words, but you'll see her receptive language is really very good. And if I can figure out how to do this, we will see it.
Let me do this one. Hey! Yay! How about this one? You want to do that one? Okay. Do this one. You do it. You can do it. You can do it. You got it. Just put it. Here, we'll put this right here. You put it on now. Almost. One more try. You try. My turn. You try.
So you can see, even without much of a language, expressive language system, this little girl and her mother, particularly from the little girl's perspective, she's paying attention both to their shared activity and to her partner. The next little video vignette is of an older child. He's 33 months. He's also one of his first visits in our lab, though, with his mother, and he has a diagnosis of ASD. I picked him because he's actually very verbal. He has a CDI report, expressive language, of over 500 words. But let me just show you what he does.
There you go. So put it back on. You want to put one on first, and then I'll take it first? Oh,
mm-hmm. It's an AD. Ah. That's okay.
You want to put one on? You want to put one on? Which one?
One.
It looks just like a one. You want to put one? Whose turn?
What?
You take a turn.
Zero.
It looks like a zero. Yeah.
So he's in a world of symbols as well as shared activities. He did say 10, 80, 1, 0. So how are we going to extract data from these videos? We actually use Mangold's Interact program now. We have two cameras, so they're synced. The coder can be watching and selecting which video they prefer, or both. And what we've been doing most of our research lives have been a very arduous process of engagement state coding, where we ask the coders to watch the video often repeatedly from the child's perspective, segment the child's attention into engagement states. Some of the engagement states are not joint, so there are things like unengaged or person or object engaged, but many of them are different forms of joint engagement, where there's a shared activity. Two key distinctions we make. One is when the child is focused on the activity without explicitly focusing on the person he's sharing the activity with. We call that supported joint engagement. Another code is the joint engagement where the child is acknowledging actively the partner as well as the shared activity. That's what you saw in the first video. We call that coordinated joint engagement. Another distinction we make, which is actually orthogonal to the supported coordinated distinction, is symbol-infused versus not. And that is, from the child's perspective, are you sure that the child is also attending to the language or the numbers or symbolic gestures in the context? Now, early on, with my colleague Roger Bakeman, we traced the emergence of joint engagement with typically developing children. This is from a study a while ago where we saw children repeatedly 18 to 30 months. And the story for typically developing children is that by 18 months, you typically, in the context that we've been watching, see a pretty steady amount of supported joint engagement. It's about 50% of time on average, and a pretty stable amount of time coordinated joint engagement. And the big story is that symbol-infused joint engagement emerges. We also have now looked at other non-typically developing children, and this shows us, as you would expect, that if you compare language-comparable children with ASD, Down syndrome, and typically developing children, what you see is that in ASD or autism, coordinated joint engagement is severely compromised. And that's the orange, I think they're orange up there, bars that both symbol infused and not. However, and this I think is very important to recognize, that supported joint engagement, even symbol infused joint engagement, with the mother may be relatively spared, or the parent. And that's what you see in this graph, the blue bar as the supported joint engagement, whether it's symbol infused or not. And we did not find a statistically significant difference between the AS, the Down syndrome, and the typically developing children when the typically developing children were 18 months, so they were language comparable. Okay, that's all background. Now, how are we adapting or trying to adapt the CPP so it can be more useful, so it can translate? Well, the first thing is that we really need to make it quicker in terms of extracting data. It takes hours and hours and hours to do joint engagement state coding. And so what we've designed is a series of 7-point rating items in which we ask our rater to watch a 5-minute segment or scene and then come up with a rating from 1 to 7 in terms of how much total and joint engagement they've seen, how much supported joint, coordinated joint, symbol-infused joint engagement. And then we did this on tapes that we had in a prior study done the state coding, and the correlations are much better than we actually had ever dreamed. They are all significant at the 0.001 level, but the range is between 0.66 and 0.96, regardless of diagnostic group. So it means that maybe these rating items would be useful if our goal is just to get a series of ratings over scenes. The other thing using rating items is we could make the data extraction broader. We could make up new and many different 7-point rating items. And we did. We did some for the child communication system, so initiation, responsiveness, quality of behavior, etc. We could do it for the parent, so we could be scaffolding, symbol highlighting, how much they're trying to get that word mapped onto the object, following in, etc. And we can also do ratings about the communication dynamics, the sustainability of a topic, the fluency, the scope of the topic. And for today's presentation, I just want to make 2 points about these rating items. We have just published recently an article that shows that these ratings actually capture a difference between a typically developing sample and the sample with ASD, so that you can really see the pervasive effect of ASD on the communication system that surrounds the child's joint engagement. And these are all significantly different except for symbol-infused joint engagement, which is because we were making the groups language comparable. The other message is that the items seem to capture change, and that's what's ultimately really important for today's conversation. This is a new sample of children. It's with a collaboration with my colleague Diana Robbins. We are looking at children just after they have screened positive on the MCHAT, but just before they go in for a diagnostic assessment. And then we see them repeatedly afterwards doing the CPP. And so what I have here is the rating items for, it's a subgroup of children, this is 35 children. We now have a much larger sample. But we do the CPP and the rating items at 24 months, and then we do them again around 30 months. And what you'll see here, these are all significantly different changes that we are capturing using the rating items in the parent-child interaction in the CPP. Now, I'm not saying we understand why this change occurs. We have lots of measures. We're going to be playing with this for a long time. But I do think that you clearly, if you want to be measuring change, you want to make sure you have items that will pick up change. The other things that we've done with the CPP, we've asked the question, can we make it shorter? Because 30 minutes of scene is a long time. Yes, we can. If we pick one of the social interacting, one of the requesting, one of the commenting things, so we have 15 minutes, so it takes about 20 minutes with the in and out of the director, you get uniformly high correlations between the sixth scene and the three-scene CPP. You can also, I hope, take it home because my colleagues, Connie and Kathy, are using it now in a brief version to take it home to see if you can do mother-child or parent-child interactions in the home within the frame of the stage that we've been talking about. We also have a series of new productions. We have followed many of our children into the future. For us, they're no longer babies. They are up to 5.5 years of age. And we change the scenes as the children get older. We now have a play which includes a focus on internal states, on narration, and on literacy. And I want to show you the same two children you just saw, but within the frame, it's actually the writing scene. These children now are each 5.5, so we're talking about a 2 to 4 year period of change. And very quickly, I bet you'll recognize these children, even though they have aged. This is the little girl in the writing scene. Where's the sound?
How do you spell A?
You think?
A.
Good job.
So you can see that strong, nonverbal, coordinated structure and the clear focus on shared symbols. And now here is the second child, also in the writing scene, a little bit older. He's 5 years, 10 months here. And here's what he does.
What is this clown like?
This clown might want to have this watch.
Okay, you write it.
There's clear commonalities across time in the interactive structure and clear growth as well. And so we're hoping that this type of repeated view will provide us with information about the change over time and the stability over time in the parent-child interaction. Now, there are many ways to tailor the CPP to intervention. I think that it's very useful to think about adding scenes that are specific to an intervention, and then likewise expanding the rating item battery to include intervention-specific items. Just to give you one quick example, we've used this with a study not of focused specifically on children with ASD, but rather children who have very delayed language, who then are in a communication intervention that some of the conditions use a speech-generating output device. And we are trying to model scenes that would help see whether this is actually changing the joint attention structure of the interaction. The other and last, how much time do I have, Connie? I want to talk about another strategy, which is to zoom in on challenging aspects of joint engagement using these parent-child interactions that we can capture with the CPP. Clearly, when there are moments of coordination and either visual attention or some other recognition that a child is attending to his partner, which I think you could see if we went back and looked at the video of the little boy that we were watching, that he was attentive to his partner. But we want to figure out what that is made up of. So we want to zoom in on those moments. Another thing that we want to zoom in on, we're doing in our lab now, is zooming in on auditory joint engagement. Children are sharing not just visual, tactile objects, but also sounds. And so we're very interested in how children might be oriented to different sorts of sounds and sharing them with their caregivers, birds, trains, names, what have you. So to zoom in, and this is a segue to the next talk, we have been trying as well to pick up much clearer pictures of what we might be watching. This is now the same interact screen that our coders see, but there's now 5 cameras. The 2 yellowish ones are the cameras we always use that come through one-way mirrors. We also have planted little teeny cameras strategically in the room. Those are the ones with the zoom lens, which give really beautiful pictures. And then the 5th camera is actually embedded on a headband that this mother is wearing that we have made in collaboration with my colleagues at Georgia Tech. And so I just want to give you an image of what it looks like. You can tell these are new because the kid's hairdo is much different than the prior one. But I want to show you what it looks like, a moment of coordinated joint engagement that's symbol-infused from the mother's perspective with the headband. And so here we go.
Mommy's turn.
What?
It's mommy's turn. It's mommy's turn. Down into the...
Yay!
Trampoline!
So we're trying to see whether this type of, it's not eye tracking, but really just very sharp video, can actually give us information about the child's attention during moments when language is being mapped onto to a shared event. So my take-home message. I think that the child's joint engagement experience does inform the child's development, and that we want ways to observe joint attention in action. And to do that, I think it's very helpful to watch the child with multiple partners, including peers, but also for the young ones, in particular with the caregiver that they're constructing a communication system with. I think that the communication play protocol can provide a stable frame with well-defined conditions that can produce systematic data that can let us capture, or hopefully capture, meaningful change over time. And then I would urge people who want to adopt this metaphor as a way of gathering rich data to play with the play, direct plays that intentionally capture the key aspects of the interventions that you are striving to construct. So, in closing, I want to thank NICHD that has been so generous over the years to support this work, the lab, et cetera, the university, and in particular the many parents and children who have played before our cameras. Thank you.